Nathan Hubbard. Spring has sprung, the birds are chirping, and the pop girls are pop girling.
Nora Princiati, the pop girls are girling. What does that even mean? You wrote this trailer. I do not talk like this, Nora.
But I try so hard to teach you.
Well, here's what I do know. This spring is packed with new releases from some of the biggest pop stars in the world, including our girl, Taylor Swift.
And every single album is back to cover it all.
We'll, of course, break down every angle on the Tortured Poets Department, out April 19th. But we'll also cover new music from Beyonce, Dua Lipa, Maggie Rogers, Kacey Musgraves, Ariana Grande, and whoever else just might surprise us this spring.
It's Pop Girl Spring on every single album.
New episodes starting March 28th, just in time for Cowboy Carter, up through Dua Lipa's Radical Optimism in May.
So subscribe to every single album on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. As a ruthless king builds his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape will fight for the future of apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and in theaters everywhere. Get tickets now. This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower What's Next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client.
And welcome to another episode of the Bakari Sellers Podcast. Again, thank y'all for everybody who nominated us for an NAACP Image Award. We didn't win. We came up a little short, but the nomination was amazing as well. But today, we're in that kind of, kind of spooky season where everything goes in American politics. And so we got to have people who are smart kind of walk us through all of this. And I have none other than Craig Gilbert with us today. How you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
So my show is kind of unique, Craig, in that we ask our guests the same first question on every show, which is to walk us through the arc of your career. Walk us through the arc of your career as a political journalist up through your recent retirement as the Washington Bureau Chief and National Political Reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.
Sure. So my first newspaper job was with a small newspaper in the state of New York called the Kingston Daily Freeman. That was kind of where I learned the business. I worked there for a couple of years. Then I went to work for Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan. He was running in his first reelection campaign to the U.S. Senate in 1982 in New York. And so I worked on that campaign, kind of writing for the campaign, writing speeches, writing position papers, stuff like that. And then got back into journalism, went to work for the Miami Herald. This is quite some time ago. Covered politics in Miami Beach and a few other places. And then followed my future wife, who was from Wisconsin, followed her to Milwaukee to work for the Milwaukee Journals. Milwaukee Journal at the time became the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Covered politics there for 10 years. Moved to Washington to work in the Milwaukee Journal Washington Bureau and have been in Washington ever since, continuing to write about Wisconsin politics, and now am affiliated with the Marquette Law School, which is a high volume pollster in Wisconsin, and still write a column for the paper.
And one of the best polls out there. We always try to give listeners resources, and they need to know that that is one of the best polls that you can kind of take to the bank, particularly about Wisconsin polls, which matter. For people who don't know Wisconsin politics, can you walk us through the people and the places that drive the vote most? And as things currently stand, why do you think we've seen every poll thus far show President Trump up in Wisconsin? And do you trust these polls so far?
Yeah, so I take the polls with a grain of salt. I mean, the polling won't tell you a whole lot more than the last two elections tell you, which is, you know, jump balls in 2016 and 2020. So I think the safe bet is to expect another really close election in 2024, especially with the same two people on the ballot as last time. I think the thing about Wisconsin, I mean, it's different among, it's distinctive among the the battlegrounds, A, in that it's really kind of arguably the premier battleground. I mean, four of the last six elections were decided by less than a percentage point, which is not true of any other state. Really, the only person who really nailed Wisconsin and, you know, was Barack Obama. And those were not close elections. But the two Bush elections, the two Trump elections were jump ball elections. Wisconsin, of all those battlegrounds, it's pretty white. It's pretty blue collar. It's like the most white blue collar of all those battlegrounds, just in terms of the demographics of the state, which helps explain Donald Trump's victory in 2016 because of the shift in, you know, Wisconsin was always a place where a lot of rural white voters were less Republican than they were in other places. And that shifted toward the Republican Party in 2016. But some other things have happened in the other direction that have kept Wisconsin certainly winnable for Democrats. And that is, you know, the Republican erosion of strength in the suburbs and the growth of Madison, which is the second biggest city in Wisconsin. It's the home of the state government and the state university system. And it's very, very democratic. And it's the one part of the state that's growing more than any other. So that has been very helpful to Democrats in statewide elections.
Hmm. You followed every presidential race in Wisconsin since 1988. Are there any analogous races in your experience that you've seen when the two candidates at the top of the ticket both have enthusiasm challenges, but also create the kind of passion in the opposite party's bases as Joe Biden and Donald Trump do?
Yeah, I guess, I mean, 2016 to some degree is analogous because both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump had high negatives. And I think looking back, most of the polling and the exit polls suggests that the deciding voters in that race were the people that disliked both candidates. And they kind of broke for Donald Trump in 2016 late in the campaign. And so I think we're looking at another cycle where both candidates have high negatives and 20% of the electorate doesn't like either one of them. And so their votes are going to be really critical. And, you know, the enthusiasm thing is interesting because enthusiasm is down. It's especially down among Democrats when you look at the last 10 years of elections in Wisconsin. We have polling data on this. And I think that's partly because, you know, Democrats are really voting more against Donald Trump than they're voting for Joe Biden. And that's going to show up in that enthusiasm number. And also Democrats have been kind of, you know, hearing a lot of hand wringing from people in the party. They've been seeing polls where Trump is advantaged. I think the polling is going to shift around. In our poll, the poll I work on, the Marquette poll, it's been very close. And I think it's, you know, probably going to continue to be close.
This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower What's Next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client. This episode is brought to you by UGG. Y'all know UGG is a brand that athletes wear all the time in the tunnel and on travel days. Well, I bet you think UGG season is only during the colder months of the year. Au contraire, you're wrong. You need to check out the latest spring drop from UGG. They have everything from sandals to clogs. I like the sandals. UGG has you covered for your next spring adventure. Shop the golden collection at UGG.com. This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth, plus view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com.
Let's talk about Black voters in Wisconsin. I think when people think about Black voters in swing states, they think Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and North Carolina. They don't necessarily think Wisconsin, which I think is a mistake. Consider when you consider the 4 years ago, the margin was about 21,000 votes. And there are some people in Wisconsin who can tell you that they probably should have focused on Black voters a little bit more, and they would be things like governor now, but that's neither here nor there. Black voters in Milwaukee and Madison can swing the election, but is this reflected in the state strategy to your knowledge? And what are you seeing in on the ground in terms of Black voter enthusiasm?
So I'm probably not the best person to talk to about what's happening on the ground, because I'm sort of shuttling back and forth between DC and Milwaukee. And I think, but I can tell you that this is very much front of mind for Democrats, given everything you just said, and given the history of these elections, where we've seen ups and downs in turnout in the city of Milwaukee. And we've seen ups and downs in Democratic performance. I mean, the high water mark was probably Barack Obama in 2012, where the turnout was spectacular, and he actually, you know, generated bigger vote margins in 2012 in the city of Milwaukee than he did in 2008, which is pretty amazing, because 2008 was a true landslide election for him in Wisconsin. So it's something that there's a lot of concern about this in the Democratic Party. It's not a secret. It's not something that people are ignoring, but then it's sort of another matter to address it. And I think, you know, people are going to be looking at this very closely going forward, in terms of, we just saw Joe Biden in the city of Milwaukee last week. You know, that's, there's no secret why he's going there and why he's going to continue to go there. This is one of the pieces in the puzzle. I mean, you mentioned people don't focus as much on the Black vote in Wisconsin, because it's not as, you know, the population is not as large as a percentage of the state as some of these other states. But, you know, when you have a state that's on a knife's edge, this is a vote that really matters. Turnout matters, and also margin matters. I mean, we've seen polling suggesting, you know, Democrats could be looking at smaller margins among voters of color. And so that's another thing that, you know, another source of concern for Democrats. So turnout and margin, you know, is really going to matter in a hyper close election.
What are the macro issues motivating voters? Like, is there an equivalent to what fracking is in Pennsylvania to Wisconsin voters?
I don't think it's hard. It would be hard to pick sort of one distinctly kind of home state issue like fracking, or like, you know, Boeing and Microsoft would play in the state of Washington, or, you know, defense spending in some other states. Yeah. But certainly over the long haul, you know, the manufacturing economy and the farm economy have been important in Wisconsin. Now, they're not as important in relative terms as they were 20 years ago, but these things matter. I mean, immigration is a big issue as much as it is anywhere, but, you know, the only border Wisconsin shares with another country is Canada. And so it's not quite the same.
Those damn Canadians, we got to build a wall.
Exactly. It's not quite the same as the issues plays in Arizona. But the other thing about Wisconsin to remember is it's just the history of sort of the kind of political warfare over this state, the trench warfare between the parties, goes back so far. It's a very polarized state. It's also an incredibly mobilized state. So even though we talked about, you know, enthusiasm questions, there's just a history of engagement and voting and turnout. And then we've also had a lot of these fights over voting itself, over the voting rules. This has been an issue in Milwaukee. It's been an issue statewide. It was an issue during the pandemic. So there's a lot of furious debate, partisan debate, that occurs over, you know, how the election is conducted and administered. And that's, you know, another factor in Wisconsin, along with, you know, things like obviously the economy and abortion, which are issues in a lot of places. One thing about abortion in Wisconsin is that, you know, that is a live issue, because, you know, the default law in the state of Wisconsin was written in the 19th century, and it was a hard abortion ban. So This is an issue that's hot. It's been playing in the judicial races in Wisconsin as well.
So one of the questions, because I'm from South Carolina, and less than 3% of our workforce is unionized, but shout out to the Ringer Union. while we are talking about this. But what role does organized labor play in Wisconsin elections, and which unions are we seeing emerge as the key players? Because while certain trade unions will endorse the president, their members are largely with Trump. Conversely, with the service unions, we've seen more alignment between the union endorsement and their members both supporting President Biden. So what's the labor landscape in 2024?
So the labor landscape is a lot different than it used to be in Wisconsin. Wisconsin was always one of those states where the union vote was really large and unions played a big role. And, you know, a couple of things have happened. Obviously, you know, unions in a lot of states, their membership is down. But in Wisconsin, we had this massive battle over public sector unions under Governor Scott Walker after his election in 2010. It resulted in a huge recall fight over governor. It resulted in hundreds of thousands of people in the streets. And it also resulted in kind of the depowering of public sector unions, including the teachers union, which was a very powerful union in Wisconsin. And then that was followed by a right to work law, which, you know, was not part of Governor Walker's original agenda, but it was passed by the legislature. So unions have had to contend with that. And so they're not as potent as they once were. And again, you do see, you know, most unions are going to be, you know, supporting Joe Biden in this election in Wisconsin, but, you know, it's a different landscape than it was, you know, in the presidential elections, the Clinton elections and the Bush elections not too long ago.
Is this all because of Walker?
It's because of it's a combination of Walker and also just kind of, you know, macro factors that, you know, unions have struggled with in here and other places. But the Wisconsin piece of it, you know, there's a unique kind of history, that recent history there that really kind of politically set the state on fire a little over 10 years ago.
All right. Talk to me about, you mentioned it earlier, but talk to me about these double negative voters in Wisconsin and any polling that you all have done. And double negative voters, we talked about it briefly, but they're voters who find both of the candidates to be unfavorable. Who are those voters? What motivates them? And where do you think they'll ultimately land?
Well, not surprisingly, they're not the most partisan voters in the electorate because these are people that are expressing qualms about both Donald Trump and Joe Biden. In some cases, they're Republican-leaning independents who just have serious issues with Donald Trump, but, you know, are Republican enough that they can't really bring themselves or aren't sure they can bring themselves to support Joe Biden. In some places, they're moderates, maybe even some Democrats who have concerns about Joe Biden's age. And so, you know, it's really hard to poll this group because by definition, they're not wedded to their preferences. And they're, I think, you know, those preferences are going to look pretty fluid in the polling. In the polling we've done so far, you know, it's moved around. You know, in some polls, this is a group that's leaning toward Biden. In other polls, it's a group that's leaning toward Trump. But I think just the sheer math of it is that, you know, the people that like Biden are going to vote for Biden and the people that like Trump are going to vote for Trump. And then these people in between caught in the crossfire who are kind of cross pressured are going to go a long way toward deciding the election. But they don't all fit into one box.
Yeah.
And so you can imagine how they could be influenced by the performance of these candidates on the campaign trail. You know, how does Biden look? How commanding does he seem?
A guilty verdict.
And on the other side, Trump and his legal situation, and also just kind of the tone he sets, the tone and tenor of his campaign. Mm-hmm. Again, Wisconsin's a place where 8 years ago, we're about to have a primary on April 2nd, which is not very meaningful on the national level because the presidential primary races are over. But 8 years ago, Donald Trump was badly beaten in Wisconsin. It was his last great defeat on his way to the nomination because in the most Republican parts of the state, particularly the Republican suburbs, they deeply disliked him. This is in the spring of 2016. And some of those fault lines are still there. So that's something, you know, per your comment about the trials that could trigger, and reinforce some of those qualms that some traditional Republicans have about Trump.
Tell me what you do know. I know you're shuttling back and forth, but what do you know about the operations that these campaigns have back in the state? Are they vast? Are they big? Are they spending money yet? Or is it just, you know, organization for Biden and the sheer just magnitude of will of Donald Trump and personality?
Yeah. I mean, I think that the Trump organization, you know, maybe a little bit more of a wild card. The thing about both parties now is that they've done this so many times. And it's not just on the national side. It's the state parties that are very practiced, very experienced. And so there's an element of the campaign that is just almost on autopilot because everybody's been doing it on a sustained basis for so long. And then, of course, it matters, you know, what's happening in the national campaigns. It mattered in 2016 when, you know, the Clinton campaign kind of took their gas off the pedal in places like Wisconsin, because they thought they had it in, they thought they were in command in this race, and they weren't. So that clearly matters. I would not expect the Biden campaign to make that mistake this time around, just given all the early in the cycle concern that the polling has fueled. And also they just know this is a pretty indispensable state for them. It's been the quote tipping point state in each of the last two presidentials, which means it's literally the state that has put the winning side over the top in terms of an electoral majority. So it's the closest thing to an indispensable state for both states. So they're going to, the effort will be maximal. There's also a Senate race in Wisconsin that's going to figure into this, that the incumbent Tammy Baldwin is the favorite, but she's facing a Republican candidate who's a wealthy businessman who will actually have the money to put up a fight, which hasn't always been true of Tammy Baldwin's opponents. So that layers on top of this as well.
Now, one of my last questions for you is to actually go back in history and talk about the other Senate race. And I say it could have been governor. I meant to say it could have been Senate if they would have, you know,
yep,
focused on Black voters a little bit more. Talk about Mandela Barnes and that race and how close it was, and what were the, as you go back and you do the autopsy of that race, what were the things that Ron Johnson could have been done better to expand his lead or win by more, and the things Mandela could have been doing differently to be a 37-year-old United States senator in a race?
Yeah, so just to sort of put it in context, it's incredibly difficult to defeat an incumbent U.S. senator who's in the out party, meaning you've got a Democrat in the White House, you're a Republican incumbent senator. Those are like ideal conditions to run in. And so Ron Johnson had that going for him. It's a really hard thing to do, and it rarely happens. So it was a hill to climb. On the other hand, Ron Johnson was vulnerable. I mean, we know that from all the polling. And so I guess the competing, you know, postmortems on the defeat for Democrats in that race. I mean, one is that, you know, the race turned out to be closer than some Democrats expected. And then maybe if some of these progressive groups that could have spent more money on the race had done so, or there had just been more effort from various parties, that it might have been enough to put Mandela Barnes over the top. The other sort of competing, you know, postmortem is that, you know, Mandela Barnes wasn't the perfect candidate, that, you know, he had some vulnerabilities that Ron Johnson exploited. And so if the Democrats had nominated somebody else, they might have had a better chance of winning. But you know, Mandela Barnes won a competitive four-way primary. And so he earned that nomination. But it was a closer race than a lot of people were expecting it to be, even late in the campaign. And so goes down in the eyes of Democrats, certainly as a missed opportunity.
What polls and pollsters out of Wisconsin should we be following, and why, and who should we ignore?
You know, there's just going to be a lot of polling of very, you know, varying quality. You know, I'm biased because I'm affiliated with the Marquette poll, but I covered the Marquette poll, and it's a unique poll in the U.S. I mean, it's basically 12 years now of high volume polling in a single battleground state. Charles Franklin is the pollster, and it's got a really good track record. But the other thing about the Marquette poll that some people may not realize, aside from just sort of having a reliable record, is that it's incredibly transparent, which is really important. I mean, you're going to see a lot of polls where there's sort of a secret sauce. You know, people are the difference between pole A and pole B is often the weighting, and it's often the modeling they do. It's the assumptions they make about who's going to end up voting. It's not just the numbers they get in the poll, but in most polls, you don't know what the recipe is. I mean, you don't know exactly how they're doing it, how they're putting the thumb on the scale of that poll, but the Marquette poll is very transparent. So the methodology is transparent, the crosstabs are transparent. So that's a good place to look for. You can not only look at the top line numbers, but you can sort of try to drill down on the website into these trends, like, you know, what's happening with different groups and subgroups of voters. And then, you know, there, like I said, there's just going to be, you'll see quality national polls dip into Wisconsin here and there. And then you'll see some not so quality polls. But it's a funny time for polling because of, you know, all the mixed methods people are having to use and the cost of polling and the low response rates. It's a real challenge.
For sure. Last couple of questions for you. What's your prediction for November?
Well, I just think it's crazy for me to make a prediction because not only do we have this history of tight races, but, you know, we got these X factors. So you've mentioned some of them. I mean, what happens on the legal front with Donald Trump? Does either one of these candidates have a health event? What happens in the world? I mean,
Jesus,
the thing about
Greg, I mean, I know they're old.
all third party candidates. I mean, there's so many X factors. But the thing we know, I look at the history of Wisconsin. It's not, and not just at the presidential level, but in the Trump era, Republicans have had a very narrow margin of victory. They've had a lower ceiling in the Trump era than they had in the previous era. So it's winnable for Republicans, but they don't have much margin for error if you go by the history of these races. And so, you know, 20,000 votes here or there is going to tell the story.
How can people follow Craig Gilbert on social media?
You can find me, you can follow me on X or Twitter at WIS Voter. That's Wisconsin Voter, WIS Voter, WISVOTER. And you can follow my columns and JS Online and the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And you can look for the Marquette polling as well.
Well, I am going on X right now to follow you. Are you underscore or are you just WISC voter?
WIS, no C. WISVOTER.
There you go. Now I'm doing it. I'm doing it right now as we speak. But Craig Gilbert, thank you for joining Bakari Sellers Podcast. You are the most knowledgeable person we know about Wisconsin, or in the words of T-Pain, Wisconsin politics. So we're excited that you were able to join us today. Thank you, brother.
Happy to do it.
This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower What's Next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client.